Outkick the coverage live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
So we have got a couple of developing situations in the world of sports. Apparently, I mean, this is just...
I just can't believe you're profiting off of Team USA right now. Unbelievable.
All right, I'm being accused of something that is totally unfair and out of line.
Benedict Arnold? That's
but
what you
also,
are.
But also not entirely false. We will get into all of that here coming up in just a couple of moments from now on Fox Sports Radio. That guy right over there is Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. This is FSR. You can hang out with us as always on the iHeartRadio app. You can find us on hundreds of Fox Sports Radio affiliates. And wherever you are making us a part of your Tuesday morning, we appreciate you doing so. We will take you all the way up till the end of the hour here, 9 a.m. Eastern Time, 6 o'clock Pacific, right here on Fox Sports Radio. So, obviously, the Aaron Rodgers situation, he apparently it looks like he's going to be back for the 2021 season in what feels like the final hurrah for Aaron Rodgers as a Green Bay Packer quarterback. And there are a couple of different angles as we move that story forward that we must get into. But then we have a little bit of a breaking news situation in the world of sports. At the Olympics in Tokyo, the U.S. women's gymnastics team was competing in the team competition, and this is for the medal. Okay, so this is for to determine whether or not they're going to win the gold. And we thought, you know what? Brady's wife, Alicia, is a... former U.S. Olympian, won a silver medal back in 2008, very well thought of in the women's gymnastics community. And we had her on in hour one, and it was a fun interview. We talked, we laughed, shared some stories. And I just, you know, I asked the question, hey, Simone Biles, greatest of all time. And I just said, all right, you know, as far as from a gambling standpoint, where are we looking at as far as the gambling goes? And lo and behold, Simone Biles has now pulled out of the U.S. women's team competition. Is it just the mental stuff? Because we're getting conflicting reports, but now we're saying that...
You can't listen to Twitter. What I'm hearing from Tokyo with some of the people that we know there, they're saying that it is the mental aspect of things. She's feeling a lot of weight. Because, look, in a team competition, and as I said before... She's so much better than everyone else that she really carries it and makes that huge difference between Team USA and the, you know, Russia team or China or Japan. But in this case, without her now, you see how the field is that much, you know, more leveled. So I think she feels the weight of the world to be at her best, compete at her best, which, you know, it's funny, at 24, it sounds young to us. Folks, that's ancient for a gymnast. Look at all the other girls competing. Now, I know there was one individual who competed, I think, in like her eighth Olympics. That very rarely happens, okay? Being 24 and competing in the Olympics is ancient for women's gymnastics. And so the fact that she's done it for so long at such a high level, it's incredible. But that doesn't mean that doesn't come with pressures. And that doesn't mean that doesn't come with even the pressure you put on yourself as an athlete in your final Olympics to compete at your best and continue to keep lifting up your teammates. And I think from prelims, you could kind of see it. She didn't have the best performance then. And it sounds like from everything I'm hearing over in Tokyo, the warm-ups today weren't that different. And unfortunately, after the vault, she decided to step out and scratch for the rest of the competition.
Yeah. So why are you and your wife blaming me for this? All right. Why am I getting blamed?
Two reasons. Because you're the one that really was motivated to set up the whole call where you feel like we jinxed her. All right. You believe in superstitions. You feel like we jinxed Team USA. If they don't get a gold medal, we could squarely put this blame on you for having Alicia on to talk about it and jinx her. And then you also just placed a wager on Russia to win this thing.
What do you want me to do?
I mean, I'm just saying, I get it from a business standpoint. It's probably a sound move, but I don't know. I could never do it. I could never bet for another country in competition versus Team USA.
Look, there's a $100 bill lying on the ground. Nobody is around. Nobody sees it. You're not picking it up? You're not picking that up? There was money laying on the ground here. Like, I'm just not supposed to pick that up and not take bet?
Might be like $400 laying on the ground.
Yes. Tell me about it. I mean, look, and I feel like I had no other choice. Like, I was trying to make a business decision here. This doesn't make me anti-American. I'm just saying there was an opportunity here to make a little bit of money.
I do think this brings to light. And, you know, Osaka, the tennis player, had talked about this. A number of athletes have talked about this, just overall mental health. I mean, Aaron Rodgers talked about it,
yeah.
You know, during his time off this summer is, you know, athletes are feeling, you know, more open to explaining it or discussing, you know, the mental struggles and strains and the pressure that they feel, you know, being in these positions, you know, with, you know, the you know, fans with the audience. And I think that's something that, you know, probably can't be highlighted enough as an athlete is, you know, going through all of it is there's a lot of pressure on them, especially in the Olympics, you know, and
I'm just saying. I'm just, you know, the Naomi Osaka story, I think would have had a little bit more, you know, validity to it had she not all of a sudden turned around and done a documentary and then posed for a bunch of covers and, you know, so it just felt like she was kind of picking and choosing what media she wanted to do. You know, that's
and that's
like
her right. Look, and that's her right. As a professional athlete, that's her right to do so.
Yeah, so I think that's where potentially there was an issue here. So, look, I mean, look, I don't feel like I deserve to be attacked via a group text by you and your wife. I'm being bullied.
I'm just saying Team USA can blame you squarely for this, all right? You've jinxed the women's gymnastics team.
This is so unfair, man. This is just absolutely unfair. Is Dub there? Is Dub there in Nashville? Is he with us here on Fox Sports Radio? Dub is our resident degenerate gambler here on Outkick the Coverage. Dub, where are we looking at these live odds when it comes to the U.S. and Russia, and how have things changed here?
Well, let's just say things have changed fairly drastically because, you know, in the NFL, let's say Aaron Rodgers is out for a game, that's a pretty significant change to the odds. But I think Simone Biles might be the biggest line mover in the history of sports because we mentioned earlier in the show, USA was a pretty substantial favorite, anywhere between the range of minus 300 and minus 600. Well, following the announcement of her withdrawal, Russia is now a minus 1,200 favorite, and the United States, and the United States is plus 6,000.
Plus 6,000?
That's correct.
Holy cow.
Man. I think this is like a historical
That has to be the biggest line movement ever.
It has to be.
Just one
gymnast. Hey, Jonas,
when
did you get that bet in, though?
Well before that. Well before. This is a sigh of relief that you were hearing in my voice. So just one gymnast goes out, and if you ever had any questions about how great Simone Biles was, that line moved up. I think you're right.
There's no way that's not the biggest of all time.
It's not even close.
Incredible. No,
that's not even close.
That is crazy. Wow. So there it is. So that is the status from Tokyo.
Plus 6,000?
Yeah, man. Like basically,
good
what,
God. I mean, Sudie Lee's good. We've got some other good girls. Have some faith, folks. My
yeah, but basically what that means at plus 6,000 is $5 wins you a Rolls Royce if the U.S. pulls this off, is what this payout is. Like that is basically what they're telling you from the Olympics in Tokyo. So there's that. Unbelievable. All right. Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, Outkick the Coverage here at Fox Sports Radio. All right. Let's do a little hypothetical on the Aaron Rodgers situation, if you will. Let's just say, and you've been all over this, and I got to give credit where credit is due. You've been calling your shot on this for a long time with all this Aaron Rodgers drama that was taking place. You have said, look, this is going to be his last year. Aaron Rodgers is not going to be the Green Bay Packer quarterback in 2022. They're going to move on from Aaron Rodgers. So when you see the news that comes out that Rodgers and them are working on a deal, you know, giving him some outs, giving him the ability to move on and sort of dictate how his career ends there with the Green Bay Packers, then the question becomes, all right, so where next? So just this is way too early. Obviously, things have to play out next season. But are there a couple of teams that we see out there that you go, you know, that might make some sense for Aaron Rodgers, because clearly he wants to play. Clearly he can still play at a high level. And this feels like the latest installment of a quarterback who's still got something left, still got something to prove, with a chip on his shoulder, who wants to go do it elsewhere for a team that he feels like can win a Super Bowl. Like, is there a couple of teams that you look at and go, that's somebody to keep an eye on? Because I've got one in mind.
Well, Denver's the first one that comes to mind, because there was already interest, I think, after his time at that golf outing in Montana and spending some time in the woods. Maybe he wants a more mountainous atmosphere that he's going to play in. But in all seriousness, that's a roster that I look at and go, whew, that would be one that would be fun to play in. I always felt that, even heck, when I was a player there for a couple of years. It's a good organization. It'd be a great roster to be a part of. They've already expressed interest. And I think after this year, right, wrong, or indifferent, this is probably how it's going to go. Drew Lock or Teddy Bridgewater, they're in a quarterback competition. Whoever wins gets the first crack at it, and if they don't play well enough, the next guy comes in. And then after the season, if they don't win enough games, which it's going to be hard to do, all right? They're in the same division as the Chiefs, who obviously is the best in the AFC. The Chargers are going to be extremely competitive, in my opinion, probably the second-best team in that division. The Raiders are going to be in that conversation, especially if their defense ever improves, given what their offense can do. And so they've got their work cut out for them. And if things don't go well, you could literally see another year where Teddy Bridgewater's with a team for a year, and you know, potentially they're looking for greener pastures, looking for another quarterback to come in. The only question would be if, you know, Vic Fangio remains the head coach. I think that would be the only downside, but maybe that's a positive too. Maybe you get a head coach that takes that job, takes that opportunity, because they're going to sell them on the fact that they're going to go get Aaron Rodgers. And plus, you know, outside of having to face Patrick Mahomes in the AFC, and maybe the Buffalo Bills and Josh Allen and, you know, a few other guys you could throw in the mix as far as your competition, it's probably a little bit easier path. I think the NFC tends to be a little more muddied in order to get there. So Denver's that team that I'm kind of keeping an eye on that could make some sense a year from now.
What about New Orleans?
Yeah.
What about the Saints?
I could see that.
Because
I could see that.
They're not committed to Jameis Winston or Taysom Hill long term. This really does feel like sort of a 1 year, and we talked about the Michael Thomas situation. He's going on the PUP. He's going to be back week 7, but clearly there's some sort of a rift there with the organization. I just wonder if New Orleans might make some sense. Maybe this is a down year for them. They kick the tires on Jameis Winston, see what he's capable of. But if this doesn't go well, I mean, who's to say New Orleans wouldn't get aggressive and try and, you know, make a move and try and land Aaron Rodgers. Reportedly, they were at least looking into Tom Brady a year ago when they were waiting on word as to whether or not Drew Brees was coming back. I just wonder if New Orleans might be a dark horse team to keep an eye on.
That's such a good call. And I think if he wants to stay within the NFC, he can. Now, you know, you're going to have to go up against Tom Brady and the Bucks, who have the edge, at least in the short term right now this year. You'd say maybe next year if he's still there, but eventually he will retire. And so, you know, that competition goes away. It's a great organization. I'm sure Sean Payton would love to have the chance to have Aaron Rodgers. And that might be one of those ways of keeping Michael Thomas around. You know, after this year, yeah, he might be upset or frustrated with the quarterback play or the type of offense they're going to run with the guys they've got. Could you imagine, though, being saying to him, hey, we're getting this this Aaron Rodgers guy coming in. Have you heard of him? You want to stick around? You know, you're going to miss about half the season with ankle surgery now, or are you going to show up on time for everything?
The strangest thing, my leg feels better. I don't know what it is. Like, all of a sudden, my ankle feels better and up to snuff, and yeah, I'll be back. So, yeah, that'll be it'll be interesting to see what sort of teams maybe get aggressive after this upcoming season when it comes to Aaron Rodgers. All right, he's Brady Quinn. I'm Jonas Knox. It's Outkick the Coverage here on FSR. Coming up next, he is one of our favorites. It is a Tuesday tradition. The great Petros Papadakis joins you next here. It's Outkick the Coverage right here, Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Right now, always kind enough to join us here every single Tuesday. It is a Tuesday morning tradition here on Fox Sports Radio. The great Petros Papadakis, AM 570 LA Sports, Fox College Football Analyst. Petros, what the hell's going on? How are you?
What's up, P?
Hello. Good morning, everybody. It's great to hear your voices. I have to say I'm really struggling this morning because I don't know if I should just go to yoga and start my day when this is over or go back to sleep. I kind of don't want to face the day. It's Pac-12 media day, and I don't want to.
Petros, say, as your personal trainer, a motivator, go to yoga. Because here's the deal.
I'm going to go, but okay. I just don't know if I'm going to go now or later because I just want to go back to bed. I don't want to face everybody at Pac-12 media day and have to see everybody, but
right, go now. You know you're going to feel better getting it all said and done. You'll have a better attitude on the
other side
of that,
with your drink and everything.
By the way, Petros, are any of the gutless media members going to ask Clay Helton about that bum that was in the facility this offseason or what?
No. Nobody's going to ask anybody anything. It's going to be a giant mutual masturbation session. It always is. That's what media day. I mean, it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter what you're talking about. It could be a movie or a conference. Or some kind of upcoming social program. I mean, that's all media day is a big, blank.
Yeah.
can we save that drop? Petros, yeah. In all seriousness, I mean, after we talked, a week ago? I mean, college football has changed so dramatically with the news of OU and Texas just in a week's time. Like, what is college football going to look like in your mind with the news and everything that's gone on since we last spoke 2 years from now? Like, how's this going to look to you?
Yeah, I've said this for a long time, not that I'm some kind of oracle, because I think it was pretty clear, like the same way it was clear that Aaron Rodgers was going to play for the Packers and the players in the NFL don't have any power, is that we're going to have like three gigantic conferences or something like that, and the NCAA is going to facilitate it happening, and everybody's going to get in line because they're afraid of losing the Power Five or some machination of the Power Five, the halves of college football, to develop their own entity, to develop their own league where they can actually pay players. They should. I mean, this whole name, image, likeness thing is the dumbest conversation. It's like half pads. You know how players will just do anything for half pads? Guy'll choke his mother half to death for half pads. Seriously. Like, if you tell a football team that thinks that they're going to be in full pad, and I'm getting to a point here, trust me. If you tell a football team that, hey, you guys are going to be in half pads, like, or write it up on the board while everybody's like anticipating, being in full pads, it will be like, I mean, a celebration like no other. I mean, it is like it's like Christmas and Easter and everything wrapped into one. Everybody just goes crazy. And for what? They still hit hard in the half pad, or God knows, like, if you want guys to die and go to heaven, you tell them helmets. You know, and guys just go nuts. I mean,
for O-linemen, it doesn't matter. They're like, okay, great.
Oh, so we matters. Have less
protection. They'd probably rather be in pads to some degree, though, because at least they're more protected.
No, they hate it. They hate getting all strapped in and tucking their balls in and all that stuff. They hate it. Trust me. Brady doesn't know because no one's allowed to hit him in practice, so he didn't care what he's wearing.
I got that red jersey on, baby.
Right. But
can't touch this.
For everybody else, it is like
tucking their balls in.
It is like the Red Sea opening and the slaves leaving Egypt when they tell you half pads. So when that became a bargaining chip in the NFL, when they're like, yeah, what do we need? We need guaranteed money. You know, you guys are making billions and billions of dollars. It's the most lucrative sports league in the world. we're going to need guaranteed money. We're going to need care for the old crooked-ass players from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. We're going to need this. And then all the NFL comes back and says to the union is, half pads. And they go, okay, done. I mean, there's the football players are the dumbest people in the world.
Well, yeah, done. No one's doubting that.
Name, image, likeness is the half pads of college football. Well, half pads is the half pads of college football, but right. name, image, likeness is the same. It's like, okay, who's making money? Well, the universities. Well, what do they do with it? Whatever they want. They make billions upon the donations that they get from alumni who are billionaires who don't know what to do with their money and want a seat on the plane. So what are we going to do to get the players some money? Because these guys are struggling in a lot of situations, and there's so much money being made, it just is hard to reconcile the guys between the lines not getting a piece of it. And what do they say? Well, we're going to let Billy Bob's grain elevator down the street pay our quarterback $30,000 to show That's up right. and sign autographs. That is the half pads of college football. It is the dumbest thing. Like, we are so stupid. And the media, oh, this guy got this and this guy got that. This guy was always getting that. It was under the table. The problem is still that the universities owe the players at risk money, and that is not solved. But they gave us half pads, and the media takes it and runs with it like Fox 2 run. I'm tired of it, Brady. Son of a bitch.
Well, first off, let me explain to people what half pads are. You don't wear pants. You got shoulder pads, helmet. Yeah. You don't have your football pants
but
on.
But you're supposed to stay off the ground.
Yeah.
Right.
And
right.
no one hits yeah. harder than the ground.
That's
no
true. One. That's true. But that's just so people understand. That's what half pads looks like. If you're envisioning a football player, just imagine them with shorts, shoulder pads, and a helmet. But Petros, so what does that mean for the Pac-12? Because here's what I read.
Hold on.
Here's what I read. So OU Texas, at some point, they're going to be in the SEC. Then we see a report that the SEC is targeting OSU, Michigan, Clemson, and they're essentially trying to align and create this super conference. They didn't mention any Pac-12 teams.
Yeah.
No.
Why is that?
Well, because USC is weak, A. No, it's true. I mean, look, USC has destroyed their football brand for the last decade. USC and Nebraska are looking in the mirror right now and saying, what the hell happened? And the Nebraska situation is different, and every situation is unique. But, I mean, we've talked about USC. They have a head coach that's not allowed to hire or fire assistants or call plays. And they run the athletic department from the athletic director. They run the football program from the athletic director's seat or the president's seat of the university. And you just can't do that and have success, not with this sport. Never. And it's a very bureaucratic, really just sad kind of governmental way to run a football program. That's not how football works. Football is a dictatorship. You know, football, I hate to say it, football needs Manuel Noriega, you know, to be the head coach. Not an administrator. It's not like USC just sucked last year or something. You know, USC has been down for over a decade. And that being the case, that's the crown jewel on the West Coast. Where's the SEC going to travel? Seattle? I mean, LA is the only destination, and USC is the only thing that raises eyebrows in other parts of the country. Not for me. I love all the schools out here. It's part of my football culture. But you can scream into the wind all you want. No one else is going to listen. And we talk about it all the time. You know, there's a reason it's super hard to win the Heisman anywhere but USC on the West Coast, unless you have all Nike's money behind you. It's a conundrum, but it's not something that just happened overnight. USC's destroyed their brand. I mean, you can get 40-yard line, 20 seats up tickets to the Coliseum right now. They're available. Those have never been available, ever. This time of year in the history of USC football, they have destroyed their brand, and in turn they've destroyed West Coast football.
And wow. so you think that USC really is the linchpin for the troubles out on the entire West Coast?
Well, what's
not
the,
just California, not
why,
just...
Otherwise, we'd be talking about the ACC as the worst conference in the world, right?
Yeah, okay, where did they go? It's because I've heard you talk about this locally on AM 570 LA Sports. Petros Papadakis, by the way, joining us here on Fox Sports Radio. But you've talked about this, where they went in a direction as far as hiring a coach. Is that where this all started?
No.
So where did this all begin when things started to fall apart for them?
Pete Carroll created an environment that was not sustainable, whether he knew that or not. And he created the NCAA sanctions along with help from Reggie. But it was his. They couldn't control him. This is the opposite of what they had with him. Pete Carroll had so much success that no one could tell him what to do. And if somebody tried, he would threaten to leave, which he was always going to do anyway. He was always interviewing with pro teams every single summer. So I don't know why that was such a shock. So he was always going to leave, but he wouldn't be told what to do while he was there. And he created an untenable environment. I mean, I was there, trust me. And then, because of that, USC's response was to take a different kind of control of the football program, which was disastrous. USC had a president who's now been disgraced, who cared more about raising money than about breathing, and everything was secondary to that. And USC has dozens of varying horrific controversies outside of the football program. You live in LA, you know that. You read the LA Times. To prove it, that guy's name was Max Nikias. He hired his buddies, Pat Hayden, and then subsequently Lynn Swan, to be the athletic directors. They hired unstable Pete Carroll minions at the time, Steve Sarkisian and Lane Kiffin, not in that order, and it now Helton, and it goes from there. But now they're trying to delegate things from the top, and you just need to hire somebody like Matt Campbell and let him work. But they won't do that because they're afraid of a repeating Pete Carroll problem. But I don't see how they're scared of that. None of the people that were there when Carroll was there are there anymore. They all got fired because of the Varsity Blues scandal.
What coaches could they have had outside of Clay Helton?
They could have had Urban Meyer. I mean, my God, Brady sat next to him for 2 years. They could have had him. He would have taken the $10 million a year, but they won't let people build a staff.
Jesus.
They won't let people hire and fire a staff. And it's like, who would take the USC job? The guy at Wyoming wouldn't take the U.S. Coach Bowl wouldn't take the USC job unless you gave him full control now. You'd be an idiot not to. And we say this all the time, but why would you, if you were anybody at USC, to hire different assistants, you have to hire like the Ryan Days of the world, the Lincoln Rileys, you know, the next big guy. Clay Helton and his likes see that as a threat. Yeah, they don't want a guy with any skill because they're scared he's going to take their job. So there's just a pyramid of weakness. And now Graham Harrell runs the show. I mean, Graham Harrell, who was at North Texas. You want to make him the head coach and run the air raid for the rest of your life?
Petros, I do want to ask you kind of
there's
more.
There's a reason we're not competing. I'm sorry.
I do want to ask you more back to kind of a bigger picture with OU and Texas and that news. Is this good for college football in your mind? Like kind of what's happening, how the landscape is changing so fast?
Well, maybe. However we get the more of the country involved, the better. But, I live in Los Angeles. And as much as I love college football all around the country and celebrate it wherever they put me to call a game, I'm invested in Pac-12 football. I always have been. And the reason USC needs to be great is for the rest of the conference. It's okay if it's super top-heavy because then the rest of the conference at some point kind of raises to that level. But with the Pac-12, look, the Pac-12 has two major problems we've talked about forever. Their TV deal, which was basically like just taking Clorox and drinking it. It blew out all their insides. And then that USC's been bad. You know, you could have a crappy TV deal, and USC, Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush were bigger stars in this town than Kobe Bryant. They were. I mean, that happened. That was a huge thing. And it came with some consequences. But the point is, it's a sleeping giant, just like the UCLA fan base here in this town was, that kind of rose up when they made the Final Four this last year. And it's unfortunate to see what's happened. And much like the conference on the West Coast, with the current structure, I just don't know how recoverable it is. It doesn't look recoverable at all.
I mean, yoga, Pac-12 media days. You got a hell of a Tuesday planned, Patrick.
Oh, and don't forget the 3.5-hour radio show. You know.
That's true. Yeah, and you and Matt Money Smith as well, too. I mean, this is going to be a hell of a good time.
No, it's not.
Yeah, but you know, at least you can have fun. At least you know you can have a little bit of fun with it, and vent when you leave there and go on the air. You know, there's some people who just have to cover it and they have to play grab ass and suck up to people in the Pac-12, and you don't play that game, which is why we like having.
Oh, I'll suck up.
Yeah. All right. Yeah.
Well, when I see Wilcox, and I'm like, oh, love the way you coach that secondary, coach.
You're gonna tuck your balls in. You're gonna go in there. Yeah, and you're gonna dominate Pac-12 media day, aren't you?
Damn right he is.
I stay for a very short amount of. It's first, and then it's depressing. It's like the worst corner on earth. It's like they might as well have it in the seventh circle of hell. It's on Hollywood and Highland with like the Spider-Man with the outfit that doesn't fit, and you know the methed out Superman that they found dead in a dumpster. You know, taking pictures with people, a giant Pikachu. Everybody's on drugs.
I mean, Petros, I assume you've been to other ones too. Like the only criticism I've had, because I think the Pac-12 Media Day dinner they do is fantastic. I wasn't able to make it this year, but in years past, that's a great event.
I was not invited this year either.
I wonder why. I'm still waiting for that invite in the mail. But compared to every other media day. It feels different, man. It just doesn't feel like everyone's as excited about it. You go to the Big 12, you go to the Big 10,
it's a
the
death
SEC.
March.
I'm not going to go that far, but it just has this feel like they feel like they're obligated to do it, and so they put it on. It's not something emotions. That everyone's excited about.
I just remember being at a Big 12 media day in Dallas, and Bob Stoops walked in with his Mary Kay president wife on his arm, and it might as well have been the King and Queen of England. I mean, everybody just took a knee. It was just like the most powerful couple in the Midwest.
Oh, man. Get him on Twitter, @TheOldP. Petros, enjoy it while you can, and we'll do it again next week.
Thanks, P.
I don't know what to do.
Do we have the drop from the beginning of how he described the Pac-12 Media Day?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we've got it there. It'll get us fired. That'll be the move we do. All right, Brady Quinn, Jonas Knox, it's Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Coming up next, things in the world of sports we've not had a chance to get to. We will put a bow on this bad boy. It's the scraps, and they are yours next here on FSR.
This is Outkick the Coverage.
Hey, it's me, Rob Parker. Check out my weekly MLB podcast, Inside the Parker, for 22 minutes of piping hot baseball talk featuring the biggest names and newsmakers in the sport. Whether you believe in analytics or the eye test, we've got all the bases covered. New episodes drop every Thursday, so do yourself a favor and listen to Inside the Parker with Rob Parker on the iHeartRadio app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Nobody's going to ask anybody anything. It's going to be a giant mutual masturbation session.
Quite possibly, coming in hot. The greatest description of all time for any event, any group gathering.
Yeah.
We just heard from Petros Papadakis.
It is Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Jonas Knox, Brady Quinn here on FSR. We will be joined by LeVar Arrington coming up tomorrow, as if the show was already off the rails. LeVar is going to stop by. We will have a good time with our guy coming up here on Outkick the Coverage. Listen, this show's been all over the place. There is a lot going on. Very, very busy show. A lot of shenanigans. A lot of things taking place. If you missed any of it, you can check out the podcast at Fox Sports. SportsRadio.com. Right now, though, it is time for something we do on the show, and it's called this.
You moron.
How could you not get to these stories?
You moron.
These are the scraps.
And for that, we turn it over to Danny G, our executive producer, to find out what the hell we've missed so far. D?
All right. Lydia Jacoby, 17 years old, becomes the first Alaskan swimmer to win Olympic gold, capturing the medal with a major upset in the 100-meter breaststroke. Shouts out to her parents for getting her a heated pool when she was a little kid.
Yeah.
Now, Brady, we know how well accomplished you were at 17. The question is, Jonas, what the hell were you doing at 17?
Oh, I'll tell you exactly what I was doing. I was working at Chuck E. Cheese.
At 17?
Yeah. Yeah, 17.
Did you have to have a work permit for that?
Back then, I have no idea.
Oh, you could. But, I think you could start working at, what, 14, right?
Yeah, 15, maybe.
I still remember, I think I made, it was $6.25 an hour. I think,
wow.
Or it might have been just under $6 an hour, but yeah, that was back then.
You know what I was thinking about
old.
That Chuck E. Cheese costume, by the way? You really can't have gas and go to work. Because you're only hurting yourself, right? I mean, that had to have been a tough day if you had a big bowl
miserable.
Of chili
yeah,
before
just
you
miserable.
Went to work, huh?
And here was the other thing. The way that the Chuck E. Cheese was designed is they had these big, tall windows. And so the sun at certain points of the day would just beam through and it would make it so hot in there. Like it was really hot. It was bad airflow. And you got that giant stuffed animal costume on. It is miserable, man. B.O., the sweats, all of it. So, yeah, I wasn't really worried about passing gas. I was just trying not to pass out. It was terrible. Terrible.
All right. And we've covered female gymnasts a lot this morning, especially with the Jonas Jinx.
I'll kiss my ass. Why am I getting blamed for this? Blame Brady and his wife. They're the ones who are talking about Simone Biles.
One story here that we didn't get to, though. The leotard is trying to cancel it. Did you see this? For decades, female gymnasts have worn bikini-cut leotards, but the German Olympic team instead wore unitards that stretched to their ankles, intending to push back against the sexualization of women in gymnastics.
Okay, I'm going to push back on this for a number of reasons. For starters, my wife competed. There's actually big money in these leotards for those athletes as far as their design, the style, etc. So that's actually one way they can make money off all this. But anytime it's the Germans, you got to be a little bit suspect, okay? This is a performance-enhancing move. They're going to try to have leotards with different ways of helping to give them more power, more flexibility. Yeah. I'm not buying this one bit at all. I think they're hiding under the guise of sexuality or whatever else. I mean, look, anytime, I don't care if it's a bodysuit and it's skin tight, there's going to be, you know, leaving some stuff to the imagination. This is about performance enhancing. This is about getting Germany back into the conversation in regards to gymnastics. So I'm not buying it at all, Jonas.
Yeah, why don't you not treat them like objects? They're actual athletes. Like, nobody watches the combine in the NFL and goes, oh, my God, they're wearing skin-tight pants. I don't know if we can watch this anymore. No, but just get over it. Be a professional. Stop thinking dirty thoughts and just let them compete at a high level. This is ridiculous. I'm with you, man.
All right, and finally, this won't surprise you. This is in Brady's backyard. Sheriff's deputies called to investigate an unusual object on a Florida beach discovered the item was a floating cylinder, futuristic-looking, being used by this man attempting to run to Bermuda. The Flagler County Sheriff's Office tweeted photos. I'm going to tweet this out at Danny G Radio. We're happy to announce that the occupant of the vessel is safe with no injuries, the sheriff announced. Reza Bellucci is this guy's name. He says, my goal is to not only raise money for homeless people, raise money for the Coast Guard, raise money for the police department, raise money for the fire department. They're in public service. They do it for safety and they help other people. Sounds like he was just trying to cover all his bases there so he wouldn't get arrested. Would you guys jump into this futuristic hydro bubble for charity?
Okay, where is
I do anything for charity. Yeah,
so what is it? What is this supposed to do? Like, to take you somewhere? Like, you're supposed to travel
somewhere
with this?
Yeah, it's like a big water runner.
No.
But you get inside of it, almost like
an
astronaut on the water.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah, listen.
Not for charity.
No, listen. I'm sorry, and I don't mean to offend homeless people who are listening on the app, but I'm just saying, sorry, man, I'm not into it. You know, like, I'll figure out a way to help out other ways, but I'm not going to, I don't trust
that. That's cold-blooded, man.
I don't trust it. Like, didn't we have a conversation about being claustrophobic? You want to jump in one of those vessels?
True. That would not be fun.
Yeah, that some floating coffin so you can raise money for people? Like, get out of here. Come on, man. Go buy him some lotto scratchers.
Be sure to catch live editions of Outkick the Coverage weekdays at 6 a.m. Eastern, 3 a.m. Pacific.